Hello, welcome and thank you for joining us and listening to our podcast, The God Beyond the Bible. Our podcast is released weekly each Friday. The content of each episode is based on the questions and curiosities we all have about God and the Bible. Many of our topics are considered taboo in the minds of the mainstream church. You will find our discussions to be, I think, refreshing and often far from traditional. But we don't just skirt around these complex issues, but confront them head on, and not in the way you're used to hearing them discussed on typical Christian talk shows. I'm Alan Rowland, creator and host of The God Beyond the Bible. As of the launch of this podcast, I've been a pastor for more than 35 years. My co-host is my daughter, Trayson, and our engineer co-producer is my daughter, Tabitha. Our mission is to encourage our audience, along with us, to open our minds to the reality that God is simply too big to be fully explored or experienced by the reading and studying of a single ancient work. In short, the Bible's not the sum of God, and to think this is to limit what He has done, is doing, and what He will do in our future. So with introductions made, thank you for listening, and let's dive into the topic of the day. And welcome, seekers, to episode number 139 of the podcast, God Beyond the Bible. And we'll just move right into shout-outs.
Yeah, our shout-outs are R.F. Klutz and Sienna Jones. We're glad to have you guys listening.
All right, our quote this week is from J.R. Rim. Intelligence is what we learn. Wisdom is what we unlearn.
I like that.
That's good. I'll have to think about it a little. I just want to say to our listeners out there, if you saw a little skip in our podcast, don't pay any attention to it. We had a little sickness, the holidays, and then a little sickness and stuff. So hopefully we'll get back on track. We were hoping, I think actually probably this was supposed to release like the 1st of December, right?
It is. But
anyway, it doesn't matter. It's gonna they'll come out in the order that they're in. So if we say any dates and they sound odd, well, don't pay any attention to it. Our episode topic for today is going to be damaging doctrines. And what we'd like to do is discuss the deep psychological and emotional scars as a result of the flawed doctrines and the dogmas of the organized church or organized religion period. So as our first point of discussion, in your opinion, does the organized church promote self-love or self-loathing? And just explain your position.
Well, in my opinion, it's self-loathing. You know, church culture really has this idea of, what was the Bible verse? Be not lovers of self. And we really take that literally. It's pounded into your head from such an early age that you're worthless, that you're this creature that the Creator can't even stand to look at. And yeah. It doesn't inspire self-love.
What that song, I always go back, that for such a worm as I, that yes, the cross, you know, yeah. But that's where we're taught. We're just despicable human beings.
How many times there's not anybody been in church very long that they haven't heard, your best efforts are filthy rags in the sight of God, you know. And I think we all agree that it kindly organized religion, I hate to just pick on the church, but even the Christian religion, I know we're so afraid. It's like we're afraid for someone to love who they are. We just don't want to.
Well, you know, there's this big push out there right now that's called self-esteem is bad for you.
Really?
Yeah. And it's I want to say a church doctrine, but it's a movement within the Christian community. And the idea is that self-esteem is the same as pride and boasting, and it's not something you should have.
Yeah, but it's
your only self-worth should come from who you are through God and nothing else.
Doesn't you find it interesting, though, that the church doesn't approach the ego issue?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, we don't do, as far as the church, we don't advise our people of ego. Actually, we've talked about it before. The Christian religion more or less promotes ego. But, all right, well, do the modern mega ministries, let's just use Joel Osteen, I misspelled his name there, but do those big ministries owe their success to the abandonment of the self-loathing approach to God and embracing a doctrine of self-love and personal success in life? Do you think that's the attraction?
I mean, I would think so. You know, what's
Have you ever listened to any of those? Not Joe Osteen. He's just one I can think of right off the top. He's always a really positive, you know, you can do this. You can, you know, encouraging and positive.
I've heard lots of Christians say about Joe Osteen, well, I don't really approve of all the things he does, but sometimes it's just so nice to hear an uplifting message. So I'll turn him on.
Yeah. I think you think there's a lot of secret undercover listeners?
I think so. Mm-hmm. Everyone wants to be uplifted.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes I can remember at the times we get some free, what is that, satellite radio?
Yeah.
And I'd go to the Osteen. And it's, you know, there's a lot. And a lot, he gets criticized because he doesn't evangelize. Mm-hmm. See? And he gets criticized because he doesn't just do nothing but the Bible. You know, he don't just stick to it. So in a way, as I've evolved, I've kind of got an appreciation, at least for that approach, whether for the person himself, you know. Let's discuss the organized church's stance that as human beings, we are fundamentally flawed. Now, we've talked about this before in a recent issue. We're fundamentally flawed, therefore we're born the enemies of God. How difficult is this mindset to overcome as a spiritual person recovering from the negative influences of the modern organized church? How hard is that to overcome?
It's hard to heal a damaged psyche. I mean, honestly, mm-hmm. it is really damaging to your psychological self to be reminded constantly that you're a horrible person, basically, if it wasn't for God looking at you through his son's eyes. So I think it's hard when you start coming out of that because you're constantly telling yourself, like, okay, you have to stop this line of thought. You're fine. You're not, you know.
Well, and I mean, I don't think that we call it what it is, but it's emotional abuse.
It is exploitation. Mm-hmm. And that's just my opinion, and I guess I'm entitled to that. Let's discuss the doctrine of separatism. Have you guys ever thought of this before we decided to do this?
To a degree, I guess, a little bit, but it's something I don't think I'd ever really put into words, just kind of a vague understanding that it's there, if that makes sense.
And if you're not familiar, and I've given it this title, this may not even be a good title for it, but the doctrine of separatism in the organized church, based mainly on the New Testament line, be ye not unevenly yoked with the unbeliever, and of course backed up by the Old Testament view of Israel being separate and more important to God than any other people who existed on earth at that time, who, by the way, he created also.
Right.
Has this resulted in the us against them attitude that dominates our society today and on most every level?
Yeah. I mean, the whole culture war, everything is based on this idea that we have to lead the world because we're better than them. And you can get out there and you can evangelize, but don't become one of them. You can't be like them.
And there's this elusive group of people that are organized against.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, everything good, that there's just these people, it's organized evil. And that's why they. You begin to look at it, yeah. You know?
The they.
Yeah, the they, whoever they are. Mm-hmm. As a believer who has stepped back and going through deconstruction, and hopefully our listeners are all probably familiar mm-hmm. with that term, and that is, I don't know who coined it or how it became that term, but we all know what it's supposed to represent, and that's a person who's been spiritually awakened and coming out of the old religious mindset mm-hmm. and all that stuff. So as a believer who has stepped back and going through deconstruction, do you find yourself prejudiced in your dealing with others by this deeply ingrained mindset of us against them?
What's really sad is that I can see where I did this a lot. Like, I can look back in years past and see where I completely had that mentality that it was.
If you don't think like me, well, mm-hmm. let's just, if you don't go to church.
Yeah.
Okay.
And practice mm-hmm. religion like I do, then you're one of them.
Yes.
But I have to play the other card here. Have you guys found it difficult as your they changes to let go of that mindset completely? Because I find myself doing it often toward the church itself.
Where you kind of feel like you're in opposition.
Which, yeah. Then, mm-hmm. then suddenly, well, have we become them?
Yeah.
I think we have. I mean, it's a struggle. I'm just being honest. I find myself trying to stop this they-them behavior, but I find myself just changing who my them is.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's true.
I can see that.
Let's talk about another strongly held doctrine in the church, and that's authoritarianism. The mindset that in the order of authority, the male is subject to God, the female is subject to the male, and the children are subject to all of the above.
Oh, Lord, the umbrella picture.
I'm a big fan. I watch a lot of reality shows, which I'm sure is not really reality, but I enjoy things
scripted
about,
reality.
Yeah, I enjoy things. And I've watched this, and I think you have to be very, very careful because there are people who will use this in situations to control their spouse in in an abusive way. You know, I am in charge. And they use that same against their children. Now, you have to be very, very careful.
Do you notice that some of these, I've encountered recently a woman that she is very, all the way through her marriage, her husband's died, but all through her marriage, she is just totally independent and dominating in everything she did. But when it comes to the church, she still has that mindset. I'm supposed to be quiet. I can't express myself here. It kind of blows my mind. Well, beginning with the impact this has on the operation of the church itself as a general rule, in many, if not most, of the denominations, has this doctrine created an atmosphere of women and children being second rate in the divine pecking order?
Definitely.
Yes.
And discuss how this mindset can be clearly detected in the organized church.
I'm going to tell a story because I don't think that who I'm speaking about would ever probably listen to the podcast anyway.
And if they do, they'll probably be in a different place.
You guys remember quite a few years ago, you were in and you were pastoring a Southern Baptist by name church. Right. I mean, that's what denomination. You invited a woman to come speak at our church.
Yeah.
And it really upset a couple in our church to the point that they didn't come back. And I had to laugh because they were so against this woman speaking in church because women shouldn't have those roles and they believed in the Bible, what it said and all of this. But in their own home life, the woman is the one who went and worked.
That's what I'm telling you. That's a very same situation. Yeah.
And it's not that there's anything wrong with what she did.
She appeared in every way to be equal or possibly even dominant in their relationship, except they couldn't accept. But that's just the dogmas and doctrines, the damaging dogmas and doctrines we're talking about.
Sort of like, and I think it was the same person, that we had a conversation with about this concept that women should not listen to just any teacher or pastor on the radio or on TV or whatever. They need their husband to tell them if that's an acceptable teacher to listen to because women are so easily led astray.
And men aren't.
Right. And it just kind of was mind-boggling because it all came from that.
But you know, that mindset that God created us to be stupid. I mean, honestly, how is that even?
It doesn't fit into anything. Well, and then it all goes back to the emphasis you put on the Bible being divine.
Yeah.
You see, all of that goes back, and we're at the very best. We're looking back at a 2,000-year-old culture.
Yes.
And some of that is a 4,000-year-old culture that we're drawing this from, and we're saying, no, that's the way God said. No, that's the way man set it up. God didn't set anything up that way. God didn't set any of that up. Does this male-dominated... Well, I want to say one more thing. Tabitha told a story, so I get to tell. Well, yeah, before I left the last church I was at, I began to include women in serving the Lord's Supper, and that was just nobody could. No, that's not. But you know, we'll talk about that. But you know me, I always want to push the envelope. And I was at that time. I was coming into my awakening, and I thought, you know what? We've got to stop this. But you can't do that through the church.
No, you can't.
Because everything I did like that, I had fewer people.
Right.
There were fewer people.
The rules, you'll get more people. If you start breaking the rules,
yeah. Does this male-dominated authoritarian society owe its place in the modern organized church to the Old Testament Jewish religion, where women were clearly second-rate when it came to the temple and to approaching the divine? And all matters, social, economic, everything, women were second-rate. Now,
women were property.
Yeah.
I mean, you basically paid someone to take your daughter.
But that's not what you're going to talk about it.
Sometimes it'd be worth it.
You know what?
I see how it is.
No Christmas present for him, right?
I didn't get a dowry. Yeah.
But you know, I think you're going to fix them to talk about it. But in
are you about sorry to sneeze? About that, guys. You about to sneeze?
Nope, I'm good. I thought I had a sneeze coming.
Okay. All right.
But you're fixing to talk about it. But when you ask people about why women should be silent in church, where do they always go? It's not the Old Testament they refer to.
It's Paul.
But it's still part of the psychological of the Old Testament. Paul carried it. We're going to talk about that, like you said. Okay, let's just talk about it. Even the Apostle Paul contributed to this mindset when we read in what we are told are his letters to Timothy. We read phrases like, let the women remain silent in the church. Let their husbands teach them at home, for the man is the head of the household. Many believe this is a religious bias that Paul carried over from the Jewish religion, and he self-described himself as, I am a Pharisee among Pharisees. Mm-hmm. So that means, what does that line say? I am the strictest. You know, he said, I was a Pharisee among Pharisees.
Mm-hmm. Paul was writing about, basically normal societal life for the time. That was the way things were done. And it's really hard, for me at least, to see us still getting shoved back into that box.
Well, you got shoved back into the box by the Catholic Church.
Yes. Yeah.
Catholic Church is male dominated. You can be a nun, but you know any women priests?
Of course not.
So, and it's amazing to me. They get male priests, and I'm not going to go on a rail because I can get in a lot of trouble here, but they get male priests, which have much more trouble controlling their sexuality than a woman does. Mm-hmm. And they wonder why they're in. And then they make them align themselves with celibacy.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you wonder mm-hmm. how things get so crazy. How hypocritical and biased is the church in its application of this male-dominated divine order when we read in other places like the book of Acts, where Paul would go into different villages, he discovered that those who were meeting would be all women, and even the meeting was officiated by a woman, had to be if it was all woman, and Paul would meet with them, and a church would be organized outside of any male influence other than himself. Acts 16, 11 through 15 is an example of that. That's the story of Lydia of Philippi. And she was a professional businesswoman who was meeting with women. And then Paul came along and they started a church in her home.
Well, let's be honest. When we go into, we've all been active in the church. The women are the Sunday school teachers most of the time. The mm-hmm. women even lead singing, mm-hmm. play the piano. And if there's an event coming, I don't know of many churches where the men step up and do all the planning and the organizing. But really, women are the backbone in a sure. lot of ways. Oh. And we sidestep that as long as they're not up there preaching.
Am I hearing it's okay for you guys to serve all the menial roles exactly. while us men wear our robes and that's what that sounds like. It is.
I had a discussion with a customer at our tire shop a couple of weeks ago because they had attended a church where there was a woman that was doing the sermons basically at the time. And he said, well, I know that it's acceptable for women to fill those kind of roles as long as there's no men there to take over. But as soon as a man comes in and he can take over that role, they need to be stepping down.
Whether he's even qualified or not.
Yeah, basically. And his thing was that he felt that he was more qualified to take over that role since he was a male and she was a female.
I probably couldn't guess who that was. But anyway, moving on. Considering the church's position on Paul's hard line against women leading the church, how are we to incorporate or balance his writings in the last chapter of the book of Romans? That's Romans chapter 16, where he names all the women to which he owes this great debt for their roles in his success in his missionary journeys. I want to read just a couple of excerpts from Romans chapter 16. I'm going to read first of all verses 1 and 2. Paul says, I commend to you our sister Phoebe. Is that the way that's pronounced?
Phoebe.
Phoe is Phoebe?
I think it's Phoebe.
Yeah. Okay, I don't know. I commend to you our sister Phoebe, who is a deacon in the church in Cenchrea. Welcome her in the Lord as one who is worthy of honor among God's people. Help her in whatever she needs, for she has been helpful to many and especially to me. Considering Paul's statement for the women to remain silent, must we then conclude that she was only a silent honorary deacon?
No. I mean, you know that's not true. I can't get past the contradictory nature that the Christian culture has. I can't get past because we just kind of gloss over because let's face it, it works out great for you guys to, for your ego. You're a little bit higher than us.
Yeah.
You know, and I think so. We just gloss over whatever doesn't.
So that automatically makes us more spiritual and smarter, right?
Of course. Sure.
Well, and let's be legitimate here. I mean, guys, I think it's really possible that Paul was like a lot of us and he was doing a little better every day. And maybe this was something, I am sure this was something that was a struggle to, and I think we could be seeing things sort of moving forward in his spiritual journey.
But we have to stop placing what Paul wrote in the 21st century.
Exactly.
Yes. He did not write it for the 21st century. He did not write it to the 21st mm-hmm. century church. He didn't even write it to any church I know.
Yes. We have to see Paul as a guy writing a letter 2,000 years ago to other people living 2,000 years ago.
And the culture was much different.
Yes.
I mean, you could probably get physically harmed, if not killed, for a woman stepping could by stepping out of her role
yes.
of society. It wasn't just a religious role. But see how we brought that forward? Mm-hmm. We brought that archaic mindset. And not only have we brought it forward, we champion it.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's something to be championed. I'm going to go ahead and read Romans 16, verses 3 through 5. Give my greetings to Priscilla and Aquila. I don't know which one's the woman. I take it Priscilla. They may both be women.
Yeah.
We don't know. Give my greetings to Priscilla and Aquila, my co-workers in the ministry of Christ Jesus. In fact, they once risked their lives for me. I am thankful for them, and so are all the other Gentile churches. Give my greetings to the church that meets in their home. Verse 6 says, still in Romans 16, give my greetings to Mary, who has worked so hard for your benefit. In verse 13, he mentions Rufus's mother, who he says has been a mother to me also. Verse 15, give my greetings to Phelagius, Julia, Nereus, and his sister. So he names, and some of those I didn't know if they were men or women, so I didn't add them. But
right.
some say he named up to 15 women
yeah.
and only about 5 men in that deal. But there again, see, how do we balance that? But isn't it funny how we never read those? And I've preached on these things in the pulpit. And people are back there in the women's back. And everybody's agreeing. Yeah. But as soon as we walk out, we fall back into that rut.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think you've mentioned before that you grew up in a time where the church was predominantly women.
In the 1970s, if there hadn't been women in the church, the doors had been closed a long time ago. Because you would have one the pastor and you'd have one old deacon.
Right.
In a congregation of 30 people, and the rest of them would be, the other 28 would be women and children.
Other than pastor, a woman filled the role of every other.
Every other role in the church.
Feels like it would have been a good time to pull forward, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Time for an unexpert opinion. Our topic today is what we believe to be damaging doctrines embraced by the church. We discussed the doctrine that we are flawed and enemies of God. We've talked about that before. We discussed separatism. That's the us and them mindset. And we discussed male authoritarianism. And speaking from your personal experience, how has the adoption of these doctrines impacted the perception? I'm talking about the perception of the Christian religion as a whole. That's people that might be thinking about, well, the church, I'm going to try the church. And then they see this archaic.
Mm-hmm. I follow this group, and it can be a little bit rough to follow sometimes, but it's called Church Traumas, and basically it's people, and this is a big one of people who have been hurt by and left the church because maybe this female was feeling like she was being called to preach, or she was being called the pastor, or all of these different things that were stepping outside of that role, and the church shut them down with such vigor and so harshly that a lot of them lost their faith completely.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know of a lady that I did her funeral when she was 92, but she told me when she was 90 years old, she said, my biggest regret, she said, I've always felt that I had a calling to lead in the church. But she said the male-dominated church had no place for me. Now she's 90 years old, and she's mm-hmm. had this...
most of her life, I'm sure.
Yeah, this and feeling, even, all of her life. And yet, even her, she steps back and said, but, you know, it's a man thing. Now, wait a minute. Yeah.
Even if you don't have that calling, I can remember when I first got married and stuff. I'm just an assertive person. I tend to just take control, and that's how I do things. And my husband is less assertive than me. He's pretty
easygoing. Yeah,
he likes to just let me. Well, when you're reading about how a marriage should be, and he's supposed to be the head of household. He's supposed to be making all these decisions, and I'm supposed to be this submissive. And I always struggled with, well, why is this my personality? Why did God create me to be the way I am? And if I'm supposed to just push that down inside of me and not be.
And do you force him into that role that he doesn't want to be in for the sake of the way a book says that you're supposed to be?
I mean, it's true.
All going back based on what? Based the on assumption that the Bible is divine in itself and it's God handed it. See, everything goes right back to the very thing that's the foundation of this podcast. The Bible is not the sum of God. It's not God speaking directly to us. It's not divinely handed down to us. A hand come out of the clouds and handed us this scroll, this book with all of this and said, these are my words, live by these words. You know, that's. But isn't that the mindset we have?
It is.
And everything we discuss on this program goes right back to that one fundamental principle that we have put, the Christian religion has put all of its eggs in one basket, and that basket is that the Bible is divine. Mm-hmm. So they'll die for that. Okay. They'll go to destruction with that to defend that one point. Because hey, if you've got all your eggs in one basket, you're going to protect that basket, aren't you? Anything else?
I think this is a good time to close.
And until next time, may the unconditional grace, peace, and love of the divine source be on, in, and radiate out from each of you, our fellow seekers, from all of us here at God Beyond the Bible.
Did you enjoy listening to God Beyond the Bible? Do you have an idea for an episode? Connect with us today. Visit our website at godbeyondthebible.com, all one word, or send us an email at email@godbeyondthebible.com, or you can visit us on Facebook. Just type God Beyond the Bible into the search bar.